start.
No.
Martin Geddes, you're much younger than I was expecting, because you wrote a piece that really grabbed my attention, and I'll point to it in the description. But you have displayed a maturity and an understanding that is quite impressive to me. So before we begin with some questions that we've agreed on, please tell us about your beginnings, your birth, your education, your life experience.
Okay, so firstly, if anyone can hear it, I'm sorry about the fire alarm.
No worries about the fire alarm. That's God with a sense of humor.
It is, right. So about me. So I come from I'm British, in case you haven't noticed. I grew up in West London.
With a nice haircut, I might add.
I'm 49 years old. I may not always look it. So I've got some good genes. My father was an aircraft mechanic at British Airways. And my mother was a shop assistant and a typist in the local court.
Martin, if this is distracting you, we can reschedule this for 2 hours.
Okay, so the fire alarm is done. Like, it's, so I grew up in West London. At the age of 11, I got a government-funded scholarship to a top London private school.
Well done.
And then I went on to read mathematics at Oxford. I spent the 1990s having a relatively traditional IT career. I worked for companies like Oracle, doing technical consulting. In 2001, I moved to America to go and work for Sprint in their mobile division, in an IT strategy role. And that spawned a whole new career for me. I lived in Overland Park, Kansas for 3 years. And I kind of then became the bad boy of telecoms because I was hunting for the basic theory about how this whole industry worked, and I couldn't find it. So until about 2 years ago, I was working on bleeding edge computer science problems and working for and with the research labs of companies like Huawei and Ericsson. So what I do today is quite a surprise to me. So of course, that's the official resume, and that's we all have a persona we present to the world. There's also the other Martin, which is, you know, I've had my life struggles and my follies and my difficulties and struggle. You know, so I've done my therapy, as it were, and I've had to learn from colliding into the barriers of life occasionally. There's that as well.
Now, where are you on the very important British question of Oxford versus Cambridge?
Oxford versus where? Sorry. I hear there's some flat marshy place out there.
Well, you know, I have to say, although I know Christopher Andrew the singular personally, Cambridge has never really impressed me that much. They produced the Cambridge Four, more recently. They've been very bad boys, but they do seem to do well in mathematics. I mean, in one sentence, what makes Oxford great?
Right. So I have a little joke about this. It took me 3 years to get an Oxford degree and 30 years to get over it, right? Because what we're actually learning at the moment, which is many of us are having to deeply unlearn stuff. Yeah, and the key skill is the ability to go back and re-examine your most basic beliefs about how the world works. Yeah, and what I notice amongst my Oxbridge friends and colleagues, yeah, is that some people can do that and others can't. And what the education system does is it rewards people who are, you might think of as rocket-driven train drivers.
yes, I understand.
Real fast with lots of horsepower, but they can't corner and they can't turn around. And what we need at the moment is rally drivers. And so it took me 30 years to stop associating myself with the identity of being an Oxford graduate or whatever, and any kudos or credit that comes with it. Because at one level, it's useful. It's, you know, mental gymnasium training, great, good stuff. Yeah. Another level, useless, beyond useless, hopeless. It gives you a false sense that you're somebody and you know how the world works and you're educated. And that's really, really dangerous. So I mention it because people seem to be impressed by it. But it's kind of, in retrospect, maybe it wasn't so useful after all.
No, I think the same is true. I mean, I've conceptualized a whole new approach to education, and I strongly diverge from rote memorization of false history, among other things. And I strongly diverge from universities that do not teach you critical thinking, holistic analytics, and true cost economics. And today I would add to that open source everything engineering. So this has been a fascinating sidebar. So tell me about how you became a notable commentator on the Q phenomenon.
Okay, so this is, I'm living a bizarre life at the moment. I never expected to be this publicly visible. You know, I was working on obscure new branches of mathematics for modeling performance in telecom networks. So for the last 10 years or so, I've been writing about the future of communications and the future of the internet and broadband in a relatively general sense, you know, both social, political, technological, scientific. Probably about 10 years ago, I figured out that the official story about 9/11 didn't hang together. Yeah, I didn't know what was true, but I knew that isn't true, right?
And let me interrupt for our viewers. I have published 28 memos from 26 world authorities at tinyurl.com/911-POTUS. It was a false flag event. I have run false flags for the CIA. Absolutely right on. So go on, please.
Okay. And the consequences of that were very, very, very severe. So it probably took me about 2 years of sat there in the evenings going, hang on a minute, something's very wrong here. But it means that there's an inversion of your whole sense of reality and authority. And
that's
and
a wake-up call.
It's quite something. So I was never particularly political, but I knew something was wrong in the world, and I was trying to find out what. So I was indifferent to the arrival of Donald Trump. Yeah, I knew Hillary Clinton was corrupt. Yeah, whatever, Trump, politics, not my interest. But the Q phenomenon was something that was very interesting to me because I'm an information theorist, as it were. You know, I pull apart complex information systems mm-hmm. for a living. And I do it from a computer science view of the world. So, you know, the Q drops, these pieces of information that appeared on 4chan at the time, they're just lumps of information. You know, from my perspective as a computer scientist, I'm not emotionally invested in Donald Trump, you know, whatever, you know, all those things. I was interested in the paedophilia stuff, because I could see from Jimmy Savile, the True Affair, elsewhere, I could tell that children and the abuse of children was central to power.
You're absolutely right. Let me point out, I've created a new website for the book that I have been sponsoring, Pedophilia and Empire, Satan, Sodomy, and the Deep State. Yeah. And the new website has a tag cloud that lists all the names. So pedoempire.org is where people can go to read a free book now in 38 chapters. You're absolutely right. Pedophilia and Satanism appear to be embedded in everything.
Right. So it's the horrific discovery is we grew up thinking that money was the ultimate source of power and, you know, the thing people worshipped.
Right.
There's a whole tier above that, right? Which is people who are above the law. I mean, anyone can get money. Anyone could be rich. But if you want to reach the highest level of power, you want to be above the law. And if you want to be in Psycho Club, what's the entrance criteria? What's the vetting process? Abusing kids.
Yeah. Let me just point out that above the law means that essentially you own Supreme Court justices and major judges and prosecutors and chiefs of police and sheriffs. And usually that's from some combination of bribery and pedophilia blackmail. So above the law is rooted in bribery and blackmail. Go on, please.
So and it's the most taboo thing, right? So it's the, there's a reason for that. It's so I was aware of that dynamic, particularly through the Jimmy Savile and the
royal family,
BBC, British establishment, whatever. Yeah, it's like the story we were being peddled was not credible. So when the Q drops came along, from one level, I was emotionally invested in it because I understood the nature of this dynamic around dark power. At another level, I was completely detached from it because I was turning up as a computer scientist. And the information, the Q drops were just an information landscape to be looked at and reasoned about using my toolkit of thinking about these problems, which I bring from doing advanced telecoms work. So I started to examine and decompose and deconstruct this information landscape and try to find, could I apply my reasoning skills to find a way in which it didn't work? Yeah, could I find a fault in it or a disconnect or an anomaly in the same way I looked at the 9/11 story and found it didn't stand up? Yeah. So, And what quickly became true was visible was the Q drops provided a synthesis of the bigger picture. So analysis was everywhere. People were looking at all kinds of different scandals and conspiracy theories and problems in the world. But the Q drops gave us the big picture, yeah, which was what we now understand as being maybe the cult of Osiris and a psychopathic cult, a sex and death cult, which has been around
for a
long time.
Good versus evil here.
But Babylonian money magic, there's a whole bunch of stuff which seems incredible, but it's how the world works, right? It's like, so for the first time I could start to see, okay, there's a big picture here. But it took me about 6 months between coming, I was following the Q drops from the beginning. It took me about 6 months before I was willing to put my professional reputation on the line by writing about them for my newsletter in an even-handed journalistic way. You know, there's this phenomenon out there, and I believe it has significance. Yeah, so that was back in early 2018. Then in the summer of, by the summer of 2018, I was very clear that this was something major and massive. You know, this was part of the Second American Revolution, and the Q drops were a product of military intelligence, and it was information weapon. And I wrote an essay called Where We Go One, We Go All, The Greatest Communications Event in History, in the summer of 2018, and whoosh, it caught off. Yeah, it's now I didn't get everything right. Yeah, I directionally I was right, but timing and some of the details I got wrong. Yeah, it's like I'm not perfect. I'm not a world affairs analyst. Yeah,
no, but the essay was a major milestone in public awakening.
Right. Yes. Yeah, and it got me censored.
That's a sign that you're over the target.
Over target. So I got kicked off Medium with no warning or reason. I've since been kicked off MailChimp for no reason, no warning. I've been censored by Dropbox. You know, even publishing my own essays. Yeah, as malicious content. Yeah, it's like, whoa. So
the day is going to come soon when we do a racketeering investigation against all of these people.
All of them.
I'm quite certain we're going to find that the deep state, the Zionists, and organizations like the Anti-Defamation League and the Southern Poverty Law Center are very much behind this as the kind of modern Gestapo.
Yes. Yes, and I felt them breathing down my neck, and this has been an uncomfortable ride, shall we say? Yeah, it's becoming a dissident, I suppose, is.
You're a truth teller in a land of liars. That's extraordinarily important. So, what does it feel like for you to be a publicly visible technologist who supports Trump and QAnon?
Okay, which is both wonderful and painful at the same time. It's wonderful in the sense of there is this uncontested space of reality and truth, and merely by turning up and looking at it, you can become it's intellectually very appealing. You know, so understanding what's really going on and the broader information war and how it's assembled is intellectually fascinating. Yeah, and because I've turned up early, there's nobody else here, and therefore it's very easy to be successful at it. And in particular, the Q drops, I believe, will be studied for centuries to come, and the nature of this operation, military operation, to discredit and remove a corrupted media industry will be studied forever.
Have you formed any impressions as to whether Q is multiple personalities, an entire unit, Mike Flynn? Where do you think Q is, where is its genesis?
It's very, very hard to answer that question, because my guess is that there must have been good people watching the Titanic and the Fed and everything for a very long time, and what happened in 1871. And, so this battle goes back centuries.
Yes.
Yeah? And there must have been people in secret societies who understood what had been going on and the subversion and the bigger story for a very, very, very long time, right? So the roots of the Q operation, as we understand it today, are presumably very deep, and the JFK assassination must have been figural aspect of it.
So it was a turning point in history. I agree. Yes. And I would add to that the assassination of Martin Luther King, who was opposing the military-industrial complex. He was not assassinated for
a Republican
blacks.
And he was a Republican.
Yes.
It's like it's ding. It's
So what I hear you saying is that the origin of the modern Q, which I'm hearing from a couple of other sources, actually can be dated back to the assassination of John F. Kennedy by his own government.
And possibly well before. So presumably he was executing a process to liberate us from the Federal Reserve, etc., and to scatter
just
to
the Titanic, the Titanic killed all the people who were opposing the Federal Reserve.
And people like General Patton had clearly figured out that what happened in World War II was based on a pack of lies. You know, we were missold.
Right, World War One, right. Not only before the war, but after the war, when Hitler and his allies and treasures were evacuated to Argentina, and the Nazis were given the CIA and the National Aeronautics and Space Administration as consolation prizes.
So the Nazis, the Germans lost the war, the Japanese lost the war, but the Nazis didn't. Yeah, the Nazis came back and regrouped. Right.
It's and in fact, there is something called the Nazi disease, and there is something called the Nazification of the United States of America. And very interestingly to me, the Zionists, who are never to be confused with Judaism, the Zionists are the new Nazis.
That I'm rigorous in keeping away from prognosticating on some of these issues. Right?
So not a problem.
So go on.
So you've said it's uncomfortable. So how do you see Q as an information weapon against what you are calling cultural Marxism?
Right. So a piece of personal history here, which is four generations of my family have been involved in the Jehovah's Witnesses. So my mother's parents, my mother, some of her siblings, some of my cousins and their kids. Okay, my father was not involved. And when my parents got married, the only person from my mother's family who came to the wedding was my mother. Everyone else, you know, they boycotted it. Once they were married, it was all dealt with. So I've had from an early childhood, I've had to deal with people with cosmologies that were not aligned, and therefore had to build a bigger cosmology of my own, right? And examining the epistemological foundations of other people's belief systems, it comes very naturally to me. So the Q operation is in the context of a world in which people's basic beliefs about reality have been subverted. You know, we've been in a spiritual and information war from the beginnings of arguably the printing press, because all of these media allow psychopathic doctrines to outspread other doctrines. The arrival of the printing press and then mass media and then the internet change the balance between
dogma and reality.
Exactly. Right? It's like it has an impact. Now it turns out with the internet, it kind of has a two-edged impact. One of which is social engineering, the other one of which is spread of information. Right? It's like so the Q operation is in this context where the very nature of reality and people's beliefs of which way is up and down have been subverted. And there's the story of Plato's cave, which I will now completely butcher in my retelling because I never did philosophy, I did maths.
Oh, you don't even have to tell it. The shadows are reality rather than reality.
Yes. So you're in the cave, and the people who have seen the nature of the cave are trying to communicate to those who are just watching the shadows on the wall to say, no, sorry, those are just shadows on the wall.
No, John Rappaport, who I admire very much, talks about the matrix, and David Icke talks about we're all a software program. Yes. I'm not so sure, but the bottom line here is I know what reality looks like and feels like, and most people are out of touch with reality. So go on, please.
So in my telecoms world, right? So computer networks are not a natural science; it's an unnatural science. We are God, and we decide the parameters of the universes we build, right? So I'm used to reasoning about universes and creating universes, and having the concept of a universe of discourse, you know, which is and is my universe big enough to encompass the
forgive me, Mark, because you're a brilliant human being, but I just want to interject one thing. I wrote the first warning letter to the White House in 1994 on the need to get a grip on cyber, and particularly cyber reality and data integrity. And what I have seen looking at the, and by the way, the CIA built the first artificial intelligence staff around me. And what I have seen is a telecoms industry, communications and computing industry, that is autocratic, top-down, predatory, and it doesn't make sense. There are no sense-making tools provided. It is what we used to call in the academy didactic, which means I speak, you listen, end of the conversation.
So when I worked at Sprint 15 plus years ago, a colleague pulled me aside one day and said, Martin, and this guy was ex-CIA, said, Martin, in order to make sense of this industry, you need to understand the needs of the intelligence community. And
that makes total sense.
I'll hold that moment. It took me another 15 years to figure out what he meant.
Yeah, no, Bill Binney, the technical director from NSA that has blown the whistle on them, has been my colleague now for several years. And NSA, in fact, when I wrote my warning letter, the White House ignored it and allowed NSA to take over the telecommunications industry and the computing industry. So CEOs violated their fiduciary responsibilities. Dell, IBM, Microsoft, today Google and Amazon, they are all violating their fiduciary responsibilities to protect data integrity.
What one has to understand the phrase Intel inside is a very amusing pun.
Yes,
and that the product of computing and telecoms isn't computational services; it is power and information. Yeah, and spying is figural to how those industries operate.
No, I agree, and I've recently become very tuned into insider trading and naked short selling, and what it boils down to is we have financialized the world based on lies. And the bribery and blackmail of members of Congress, particularly the U.S. Banking Committee, and of course the Security Exchange Commission, which is a RICO organization. I mean, they should be under deep investigation. We have basically been all treated as chickens. We are being looted. And the telecommunications industry is a primary vehicle for enabling that looting. So let's go on to how you see Q as an information weapon against cultural Marxism.
Right, so cultural Marxism is tied back to the Frankfurt School of Thought, which is the philosophical foundation of Marxism itself. Sabatier and Frankist, a whole bunch of people. It's complex. It's like
represented today by the Tavistock interest, the Council Tavistock Institute, Council of Foreign Relations, the Atlantic Council, NATO, and others.
Okay, so their core philosophy is a psychopathic one, which is to see everything through power relationships and nothing through love. They have been spreading what we might call as being subjectivism, that there is no objective reality, is that everything's
subjective. Black lives matter so much that blacks shouldn't have to take final examinations. That's the new dogma.
Right, so it's, and it subverts the moral order, ethical order of society in the process.
Right.
Anything can be justified in retrospect by its benevolent influence on supposed victim and persecutor power groups.
I notice that the left now believes in pedophilia and bestiality, not just flagrant perversions.
It is essentially evil to its core. The impact. If we relate that to the corrupted media industry in Q, we have a population who are all watching the shadows on the wall, thinking, the TV news, thinking it's reality. Many people confuse the shadows on the wall that are being presented to them with being real. And what Q is, it's an information weapon. It's quite a subtle one, which is at the heart of it is a very, 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 very simple little mechanism, which is the identity of Q, as you alluded to earlier, right, is who is Q? Is it this, is it Donald Trump? Is it the people, the Army of North Virginia? Is it, the NSA? Is it, is it Pleiadians? Is it queer? It's, we don't know, right? It's like, we don't know who Q is. It's, so the identity of Q is a question. And that question is unspeakable and unanswerable within the cosmology that the media is offering up to the public. So there's hundreds of articles, possibly thousands of articles, all telling you this QAnon phenomenon, it's some terrible right-wing fringe extremist and unacceptable thing. But not a single one of them will address that who is Q? Is Q Donald Trump or not?
Or because the fact that Q has been proven right going back several years, Q predictions have been documented in reality.
Right. So Kevin Kleinsmith being pleading guilty yesterday is a very, very big indication that the Q people are on target. Right.
Right. And I've said that's the first of many. In fact, I'll just share with you this cartoon that I commissioned. These are all the people that I am expecting to be indicted or dealt with at some point. So you see Q as an information weapon, but Q reaches a tiny fraction. I would estimate less than 5% of the population. What is the larger post-Q phenomenon?
Okay. So what we're doing is we're creating a nucleus of people who are open source researchers.
Right? And this is truly woken up, not like the woke morons.
So there's a huge open source research initiative that sits around Q. The Q drops themselves are only a tiny, tiny part of the information base that we have. So what we're doing collectively is reconstructing reality. Reality has been deconstructed by the cultural Marxists, right? And presented in its own shadow form. And what we're doing is uncontaminated by the fruit of the poison tree, right? Completely from existing open source, legitimate public sources, we are reconstructing objective empirical reality. Right? It's we're engaged in the most profound philosophical activity that's been happening. It's a second enlightenment.
Yes, it's a second enlightenement. It's a second American Revolution. It might even be the freedom of Europe at some point.
They have to go together, right? So the Q drops are a tiny part. Around it, there's a community of open source researchers. Around that, there's a wider body of MAGA, Q, Trump people who understand the nature of what's going on. So we're building layers upon layers and upon layers of people who understand what is real and what is not, and are asking themselves that they're able to reflect upon: am I watching Dancing Shadows, or am I actually sat in a cold cave? what's real and what's not real, right?
So there's talk now in the United States that Donald Trump might actually repeat Donald Trump might actually repeat Ronald Reagan's sweep of the states. I'm not so sure.
I think you'll greatly exceed it, because between now and the election, I expect some of the truth around Clinton Foundation and Haishi to come to light, as well as Epstein and Maxwell. Crimes
and 9/11,
against children.
And even extraterrestrials. I mean, full disclosure releases free energy, which makes unlimited desalinated water possible.
There's a lot coming. But the one thing that cuts through the mind control and brainwashing is crimes against children. We are so deeply and innately wired to nurture and look after children that narrative...
And people are wired to not believe that there is pedophilia and murderous pedophilia and satanic ritual abuse, which is why I sponsored the book on pedophilia and empire, Satan, sodomy, and the deep state. And that's why people need to go to pedoempire.org as well as Q. So I think you're right. I think we're on the verge of a flip here. What's your European perspective on what's happening in the United States today? Because I want to draw us to a close and keep this short, because many more people will see it if we keep it short.
Cool. So notably, I'm sat here in London right now. Now, I've crossed the Atlantic 100 plus times in each direction in my life. I spent at least 5 years of my adult life in the United States. But I find myself as a commentator on events in America, but not, I'm not an American. I'm a mid-Atlanticist, as it were. It gives me a slightly different perspective to many other people about the nature of nationalism and constitutions and common law and, you know, these basic foundations.
Roman law. I mean, we've lost the law by becoming basically, as it's been explained to me, is we have completely lost sight of natural law and Roman law, and we have substituted a law that can be bought. And the law today is corrupt to the bone and anti-human.
Right. So my sense is that at the moment, the future of humanity rests upon what happens in the United States. It's, a huge weight is currently being put on the shoulders of the ordinary American who has been under the most vicious assault for decades, but from a silent war and a subversive, infiltrating enemy who's been attacking the American public through every possible vector. Everything has been weaponized, no matter how unethical or illegal.
No, I agree, and that includes food, water, health, chemtrails, geoengineering. Has been an assault. And I would add to that the assault on the women of Africa. Bill Gates has been sterilizing the women of Africa and mutating Indian children in India. So from your perspective, the United States is central. So I think we need to draw to a close here. Where can people get more information and insight from you? Because I consider you borderline genius, if not full up genius. Where can people watching this go to learn more from you?
Genius is the most painful medical condition in the entire world.
It is, anyway. Because I'll tell you something. I straddle the line between genius and lunacy every single day. They are two sides of the same coin. I'm deeply sympathetic. So where can people learn more about...
Very, very simple, which is I've packaged together 10 of my best essays on this Q phenomenon. They're available for free download. Just go to onq.martingeddes.com. Easy peasy. Right. It's free download, PDF, read it. Yeah, someday I'll produce a proper book. But
I'm going there myself. So onq.martingeddes.com.
onq.martingeddes.com.
Well, I'll put that. Download, I'll test that link, and then I'll put it into the description and also into the top comment. So I want to draw to a close and offer you an opportunity. I think President Trump knows most of this. But there may be a particular insight that you have that you want to share with him or with the American public. What are your closing words?
We are with you too. Yeah, it's actually words of gratitude. Gratitude would be my thought, which is to understand that there are people around the world who can conceive of the nature of the battle we're involved in and personally support you and are willing to put whatever they've got on the line for it. It's and maybe it's almost like if it's a personal message to Mr. Trump, it would be don't be afraid to tell us what you need. Yeah, it's like we're here to support you and your family too. It's a reciprocal relationship, and what you can do for your nation and what the nation can do for you, like in the JFK sense, which is I'm not expecting someone to come along and rescue me. It's from evil. It's like we all have a contribution to make, and it's important to make it clear as to what that contribution is.
There's a very important joke in South Africa where this really rich man has fallen into the river and is about to be eaten by crocodiles. And a black guy comes along. He says, "Give me your hand, give me your hand." And the rich guy isn't willing to give him his hand. And then the black guy has an epiphany, which is the smart people word for aha experience. And he says, "Okay, take my hand. And the rich guy takes his hand and is saved. What you have just done is caused me to realize that the president has not asked us for help. He's carrying this burden by himself. He has not given us an opportunity to serve him. I find that absolutely and utterly fascinating. Do you have any other last words before I say our traditional blessing and close this?
Last words. Yeah, the thing I've said on several interviews, and it's kind of a bit left field, but you need a pole star, and loving kindness or God or whatever you want to call it. It's like you need to have something that's not, in a world of change, you need something that's not changing. You have to believe in something that doesn't change. And so for me, that's loving kindness. Other people call it God. They have their own cosmologies. But you need to have faith in something. And that's what I believe in.
You know, Martin, it's very rarely that I meet extraordinary, truly extraordinary people. And you are certainly in my top six. I am reminded of the phrase that's now gaining currency, faith, family, and freedom. But I think you are a compass pole star for all of us. And I've
struggled. I found it hard at times. Yeah, it's like this has not been an easy journey.
You are righteous. And I really deeply respect that. God bless you. God bless America and those few Englishmen that are totally honest. And God bless the president and the first lady. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
Cool. So.